G'day, Groovers. Welcome to another installment of The U Project. You know who I am. But we haven't heard from this person for a few eps. Melissa Marie Cameron, over there at TYP Central, just keeping the wheels of industry turning as she does, the glue that holds this flimsy company together. Good morning to you. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Craig Anthony Harper. What a lovely intro. That is not true, but lovely.
You are indeed. You are indeed the wind beneath our collective wings here at the project. That is you. Are you well?
I'm great, thank you. Are you well?
Oh, look, I'm happy. I'm good. We're going to talk about happiness today, but I'm good. I'm just cranking it out. I've got a gig tonight. As we record this, it's Tuesday. It's about to click over 1 p.m. And I've got a gig with about 1,000 people tonight in 38 countries for Hewlett-Packard in 4 hours. And I said to Melissa, Scooter, I said, why don't we do a podcast and talk about what I'm going to talk about tonight? We'll call it a dress rehearsal. We'll call it, you know, practice. We can practice on our peeps. Well, not really. I just think it's a broadly relevant conversation. I thought, I don't know if we've ever done one ep which is solely focused on happiness. I don't think we have, but we're going to do that. Anyway, I'll shut up. Are you well?
I'm great, thank you. But I would like to know, have you got your costume on for your dress rehearsal? Got your makeup on, your costume?
Yeah, no, I'll put all that on later. Okay. So I'll tart up later.
Isn't the whole point of a dress rehearsal to like practice that?
No, this is just the audio dress rehearsal. I don't need to frock up because no one can see me. And also, if I frocked up, you'd be so fucking distracted because I'm so stunning. You know what is funny? Speaking of frocking up, and I'm being silly, of course, but I literally do corporate gigs now in a T-shirt, which is hilarious.
Yeah.
Because you can only pretty much see me from the shoulders up, if that. Like sometimes it's pretty much just your head on the screen. It's not like you've got your – so even if I'm wearing a shirt, they would only see the collar. And because I've got a black background with the U Project logo and I'm in a black T-shirt, nobody's throwing their arms in the air going, oh, he's inappropriately dressed. But it's been an experiment that over the last 18 months to see what I can get away with. And what I now know I can get away with is a black T-shirt and jocks. So I wouldn't suggest any public speakers model themselves on my wardrobe protocol, but just saying.
Do you feel like that protocol has improved your performance?
Well, there's just a lot of freedom. There is one further step I could take for more freedom. But at this point in time, I'm just going to stay where I'm at. And
yeah, I wouldn't risk that.
Yeah, I wouldn't risk it either. I'm being silly and don't anybody think about that.
Just in case there's like a fire alarm or something that goes off during the session.
And I've got to run out onto Hampton Street and there's Harps in his black T-shirt. How on earth did we get to that?
Wow. I don't know. I'm guessing you would also be doing these gigs with bare feet though. See, I feel like that might make a difference.
Of course I'm joking. I'm not sitting here in jocks. I'm sitting here in my shorts and my bare feet, which I am right now in a flannel shirt, shorts, bare feet. So my actual corporate attire is T-shirt shorts. So, and it's good. You know, there's something funny. We've spoken about this before. Adam Alter, who wrote a book called Drunk Tank Pink that I've mentioned maybe 10 times in nearly 600 episodes, but he talks about the way that our environment affects how we feel. Mm. You know, and so not just, oh, am I in nature or am I in the concrete jungle? Mm. But am I in an office that I really like? Is it good lighting? Is it warm? Is it cold? Is there an air conditioner behind my neck? Does it smell good? Are there, you know, it's like, you know what I'm like? I'm literally got a candle about 1 foot away from me that the lovely Fiona, who is my candle supplier, shout out to Fee, the candle supplier. I'm never running out of candles. For me, it makes a difference the environment that I am in. And like I said, not just the room or the situation, but the way that we create that space for ourselves. And part of environment is clothing.
Yes.
So I work better. I learn better. I focus better in certain clothes.
Yeah.
And I'm actually, and this sounds weird, I'm happier in certain clothes. Mm. And so what we know about happiness is, well, many things, but one of the things that we know is that there's an unconscious correlation between our external environment, and that could be, am I at the beach or am I in my bed or my bedroom?
Yeah.
So it could be a gigantic environment, like I'm at Ayers Rock and I'm just basking in nature, Uluru, I should say, or, you know, I'm in the laundry and the shit's falling down and the washing machine's clunky and there's a kid pulling on my belt and you know, so there's an important thing to be considered when we are trying to find a space or a place or an environment that is going to optimize our emotional system and our psychological system so that we can do whatever that we're doing well. Mm. You know, like I'm in my studio downstairs at my house and I really like the studio.
Yeah.
And I like it because the lighting's bright, it's soundproof. There's a real, it sounds funny, but the colors in here I love. There's like, there's gray walls, which sounds terrible, but they're not. It's conducive to what we're doing. To my left is a great huge window, which looks into my lounge room like you would see in a radio studio. In the corner, there's two awesome orange chairs, which sound fucking revolting.
They're cool.
I'm sitting at a giant timber desk that's beautiful and it smells like wood in here. It smells like candles and wood. You know, and I walk into this room and it changes my state.
Mm.
But yeah. Conversely, shout out to Brain Park and Monash. Love Brain Park, love Monash. But when I go sit in my cubicle at Monash to study, it's not the same feeling.
Really?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
I mean, I love being there because, you know, my school friends are there, you know. My school friends, my playmates are there. But it from a, when I'm sitting in that cubicle, fuck, I really struggle to get in a great space.
Mm.
Whereas when I'm upstairs from where I am now with my home office, which has got big, it's got black mushy carpet that I just walk around and my toes sink into and it's warm, but it's not hot. And it's, you know, all that shit.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
And I think like, I've said this to many times. If you work at, to people many times, if you work wherever you work, I mean, you spend a lot of time there. So trying to create an environment that you like going into. I'm not talking about the other humans because there's probably often not a lot you can do about that. But as much, and even if you've been given an office and it's a bit stark and it's a bit bleak or whatever, like youify it, you know, make it a bit you. So yeah. You like being in there.
And if you feel productive in that space as well, like if it just makes you feel like you could be creative or you could, you know, you want to complete stuff, you want to sit there and you want to like be part of it rather than wanting to escape 5 minutes in.
Exactly. Like, yeah, like I created a garden outside and I've banged on about this a few times and I love being in my garden and I've got 50-foot bamboo trees and I've got a Zen den outside where I can sit and work like in an external office on warm days. And it's not the fanciest house in Australia and it's not, you know, it's not opulent, but it's just me and it just works for me and I've got whiteboards everywhere. And I know for most people that would be ridiculous. I get it. I get it. Like people come to my house and go, you've got a fucking giant whiteboard in your kitchen. You've got a giant one in your studio and I've got two others in my office and I've got another giant one in my bedroom, you know, and people are like, what? Like Bianca Chatfield came over here who was on the block. We love Chatters. Shout out to Chatters who's 20 weeks pregnant. She was over the road with her bloke Scrivo getting a coffee yesterday. Shout out to Bianca Chatfield.
Really?
Yay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And she's hardly showing, by the way. Yep. Listen to me. Like like a nana. She's hardly showing. She looks so well, honestly, Melissa. But she came last time she came here to do a podcast when, you know, the world wasn't on fire.
Mm.
She just shook her head because it's definitely not, it doesn't improve the decor or my whiteboards. And then remember a few weeks ago, I found on my walk, I found a homeless whiteboard.
Yeah.
Right? I found a homeless whiteboard on a pile of rubbish, and it was like, for me, finding a homeless puppy. And I couldn't really, almost, right? Like, I just felt so sorry for this whiteboard that was in perfect condition, and it was a big one on a frame and wheels.
Oh, no.
And I put up a picture of it, and Bianca wrote one word in her comment. She goes, no. Like, no. That was her comment. I'm like, all right. All right. Anyway, that is life, isn't it? So she misses out on the joy of, but this is one of the funny things, right? We talk about what makes us happy, and that's our loose topic, or that's our topic today, what makes us happy or what gives us joy. And I think we can talk about what other states or emotions or conditions live in, let's call it the happiness family, right? And so I'm going to say things like, you know, joy and calm and contentment and purpose and meaning and connection, and all of these are like live in the vicinity of happiness, you know?
Mm.
And so when I get up and I'm in a place that, you know, and I also like to embrace discomfort as well, but I've created a space and an operating system and an environment that helps me be creative, that helps me produce good work, that helps me eat well because I've organized everything with my food because I have food issues that, you know, not as well as I'd like to because I can't go to a gym, but where I can train, where I can study, where I can focus, where it's relatively quiet and, well, especially in this room, I can pay attention. So, you know, it's just, and yet somebody else living in this house would absolutely hate it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's trying to, this stuff is, it's not like, oh, what makes you happy? It's, what makes people happy? It's like, no, what makes you happy? Where does happiness live for you? Where does purpose live for you? Where does connection live for you? Where does joy and fulfillment, you know? I think when people talk about my experience, you tell me what you think, but my experience is, like, happiness is a scale. And the other thing too is you got to remember, because we all think differently, we can all be talking about the same word.
Yes.
But what does that mean? Exactly. Like, what is happiness to my mum, I'm pretty sure, doesn't mean the same thing as happiness to me.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, she wants to be happy. I want to be happy. Ron wants to be happy. You want to be happy. Fiona, the candle supplier, wants to be happy. Right? Bianca, the whiteboard hater, wants to be happy. She'd fucking hate living in my house. The first thing she'd do is remove the whiteboards, right? And that's not wrong.
Yeah.
That's right for her.
Yeah.
And so I think one of the smartest questions we can ask is, one, what is happiness? Like, what's my definition? What's my definition? Like, what does it mean for me? And because if I can't define it, I can't create it, you know? And it's like when people say to me, I go, what does happiness mean to you? And they go, oh, lying on the floor with my puppy. I go, no, that's what creates happiness. That's the process of creating it. But what actually is it?
Yes.
Like, what are you feeling? What are you feeling, right? Yes. What is that state that you want? And another really good question, I think, is it something that can be a constant?
Exactly. Or is it fluid? Yep.
Is it? Yeah. Does it come and go?
Yep.
And is it unrealistic to expect to be happy perpetually?
And is it not something that you're maybe going to understand or comprehend the definition of in one go? Like, for me, even the term happiness and understanding what that is for me has developed over time. Once I've gotten to, like, up until maybe 8 months, 2 years ago, I used to define happiness as a feeling of contentment. But then I got this real feeling of contentment and I realized, you know, this is great, don't get me wrong, but I feel like I need a little bit of ambition sprinkled in with contentment to actually feel the happiness, because I felt it was bordering on a little bit of kind of flat because, yeah, I'm feeling content, but is it really contentment that I'm after? Mm. Or is this really contentment that I'm feeling? Mm. Or is it because I still feel the need to add in, as I say, that little sprinkling of ambition so that I'm still looking to maybe achieve or create something further? So I feel like even the definition of what we how we define it for ourselves may adapt over time once we start experiencing what we think is happiness.
Oh, look at you. Look at you. That is very clever. So maybe what made me happy in inverted commas 10 years ago won't make me happy today.
Yes. Or even what you define as happiness.
Ah. See, this is the beauty of having these conversations, because I know there was a time when I would work in my gym on the gym floor and we would have fucking Spice Girls playing or something ridiculous. Tell me what you want, what you really, really want. And sung with a little bit more tune than that. And, and we'd have whatever just jamming, and my trainers and my clients and this vibe and this culture and this energy, and it was all go, and it was crazy, and it was fun, and it was unpredictable, and it was 16 hours a day. It was fucking exhausting and euphoric and mayhem and magic. And then one day you go, all right, that's enough.
Yeah.
Not literally one day, but kind of over time, where you go, okay, now it is not bad. I love it. I still love going to the gym when we're not in a global crisis. But do I want to be on the gym floor handing people dumbbells, kettlebells, barbells, counting reps, going, two more, John, one more, John, well done, have a drink?
Yeah.
No, I fucking don't.
Yeah.
Now, that's not a bad job, but it doesn't do it for me now. But it did for a long time, because interspersed with the rep counting and the encouragement and the setting of bike seats and the smelling of stinky fucking bodies, in the middle of all of that was, coaching and learning and great conversations and beginning to understand human behavior. And, it was a real journey, and for a very long time it worked. But I think that thing that what will make me happy, as you rightly point out, is organic. It is fluid. It is something that, what will make me happy changes over time. But then that, so when we talk about happiness, like, what's the difference between happiness and joy? What's the difference between happiness and contentment? What's the difference between happiness and feeling fulfilled and valued and important? Or what's the difference between happiness and equanimity, which we talk about a lot on this show, which is being calm and content and present in the chaos where it's a shit fest. Like right now, for many people in the world, it's something of a shit fest, a pandemic shit fest. But in the middle of all of the stuff that we can't control, we try to self-manage optimally. And then that begs the question, thanks for asking, that begs the question, so how much of happiness is about what's going on around me?
Yeah.
And how much of it is about what's going on within me?
Exactly.
Is the outside stuff making me happy, in inverted commas, or is my internal story about what's going on or not going on?
Yeah.
Making me happy, and that's like, when you think about, and I spoke about this the other day, I think with Tiff, but so I want to run through it once more, because it's a work in progress in my head. And this is, I don't know if this is good or bad for our listeners, because invariably I go down a rabbit hole of trying to figure shit out myself. And then I want to bring it to the TYPers, because if I can share it and teach it and talk about it, then it consolidates it for me. So I'm being a bit selfish.
No, I think that's great. I think, because even understanding how you're thinking things through can lead to us hearing things in a different way. Like, people might have heard it the other day and they hear you explain it one way, but now there's a little extra thing that you've included or that you've thought about since that just makes that penny drop. So I think it helps.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And so for this bit, I'm speaking to, as I've said many times, but we're developing the concept of, okay, we live in or we function as humans in two spaces, the physical and the non-physical, the seen and the unseen, the three-dimensional and the not, you know. So you think about something happens in our external world. Let's just call that an event. So something happens. Let's call it a stimulus. Same thing, a stimulus. Let's get sciencey. So something happens around us. We see it, we hear it, it's near us, it's said to us, or it impacts us in some way. It could be a word somebody says or a comment. It could be some new information that comes into our data processing center from some external source. It could be even a look. How many times have I thought over my years, and I'm not bad at this shit, but over the years, somebody looks at me, I go, oh, fucking hell. Oh, yeah, what have I? Yep. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Right? And then 14 and a half seconds later, I'm in a state of turmoil because I think that person hates me.
Yeah.
That hate and probably want me dead. And also, they're going to go and say bad things about me. And also, it's probably going to fuck up my business. And also, I'll never get another speaking gig. And also, this will be the end of me as I. And also, you know.
Whereas somebody, really, they were just concentrating. They were just listening to what you were saying.
Or they had wind.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
Or they were farting and trying not to let me hear, right? You know, this is the fucking craziness and beauty of the human mind is, and we do it unknowingly and without awareness quite often in the moment. So, you know, something happens. So let's go between there's the thing that happens and then there's an outcome. And let's just say the outcome is, well, now my day's better or my day's worse or my day's the same because this thing happened. Now I'm having a shit day because of this thing. Well, I want to suggest that it's not exactly that. There's two more steps. So there's the thing that happens, there's the event or there's the stimulus, there's the person that looked at me, and then there's me going down a rabbit hole of self-loathing and fear and anxiety, and now I'm in a shit state and I'm having a bad day and fuck, it's because of her or it's because of him, right? But there's two other points between the stimulus and the outcome. And the first one is the interpretation. So, all right, and this is where we need to be mindful. Because like somebody looks at me or I get some news, you're not getting the pay rise, or that gig I thought I had for X amount, you know, next week, they cancel.
Yep.
Or your mum's crook, right? I've had that news a few times. Or your dad's crook, right? Mm. Or, you know, the crab dropped dead in the gym. I've had that one, right? I've had interesting news over the years, right? So there's the thing that happens, big or small, and then there's our response to it. And our response is a cognitive, emotional, and physiological and behavioral one quite often. So the stimulus is something happens. Then the step two is then I interpret it. I tell myself a story. Mm. And the story might be, oh, this isn't a problem. Or my story might be, this is a fucking catastrophe, even though it's the same stimulus.
Mm.
Which is why two people can have the same event happen, but they're not going through the same thing.
Yeah.
Because their experience, their personal experience, listen close, everyone, lean the fuck into the speaker. Their personal experience is not about the thing, but rather their response to the thing.
Yes.
Then that means, oh, I'm in charge of my state. I'm in charge of my reality. I'm in charge. I'm not talking about situation. I'm not talking about external physical world. I'm talking about internal reality. Oh, I'm in control of the experiences that I create. Yes, there are external forces that poke and prod and influence and sometimes derail me. Of course, that's inevitable. Like, oh, COVID, right? There's that. But even how we respond. And then somebody goes, oh, yeah, but you've got this and we've got that. Yep, I get it. And I'm not saying that it's not hard. Even for people who have lost their job, we're not going, you know, oh, we'll just suck it up and think positively. We're not saying that at all.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I'm the first to go, guess what? It's kind of fucked at the moment.
Yep.
It's kind of shit for a lot of people at the moment. This is part of being practical, and part of the philosophy of stoicism, and stoic is not going up, I'll be all right, fuck off, I'm good. Stoicism is understanding that life's not fair. Bad things happen to good people. Good things happen to bad people. Sometimes things are shit. Sometimes things are great for no apparent reason. But in the middle of all of the stuff that we can't control is me, the human that I can control, if I do the work. So the first thing is the stimulus. The second thing is the story that I tell myself about what happened just now, the meaning that I give that thing, the power that I give that thing, the significance or the importance, the impact that I let that thing have on me, right? You know, I read a thing this morning that said more people like speaking in public ranks higher on the fear list than dying for people.
Really?
Like more people are scared of speaking publicly than dying. Now, I don't know if that's bullshit, but that is what I read.
Wow.
And I'm like, wow. And that's a beautiful example because, you know, we go, well, everyone understands what speaking in public is, and I'm not saying anyone needs to do it or not do it. But like literally that is my job. Like even now we are, although it's not speaking in public, it kind of is because a bunch of people are going to listen to this, right? This is not you and me at the cafe just talking shit. This is you and me on Zoom talking shit, but also with an awareness in the back of my head that we're not the only ones in the conversation.
Yeah.
Right? Now you and I have had people who have jumped on a Zoom call. We won't say who or sat in the studio, not too many, but over the years we've had one or two that the moment and 3, 2, 1, we're live, they're fucking terrible.
Yeah, it's a completely different person.
They're fucking terrible. And not terrible humans, they're just scared. They're great humans, but they're scared. And now the thing that they could do 30 seconds ago, which is chat to me freely and talk about their whatever, their beliefs or their story or their journey or their message, or the thing that they could do, now all of a sudden they have an awareness that lots of people are listening, and now they've been overpowered and overtaken by anxiety and fear. Right? The only thing that's changed is not what they're doing, because they're still just talking to me just like they were 30 seconds ago, but now they are aware that, oh, there are other people listening, not just Craig and Melissa, and now there's anxiety, now there's fear, and now there's a decline in performance, and now I'm anxious, and now I'm nervous, and now I'm not enjoying it, and now I'm not having a good experience.
Yeah.
Then you go, all right, I get it. So what created that bad experience? Was it public speaking? Was it us turning the microphones on, or was it you? And the answer is, we might not like it, but it was you. It was your story about, fuck, we're live, and now lots of people,
Yeah.
Right? And so, and what we also know, the good news is we know that if that person can have a meaningful dialogue with me without the microphones on, they can do the same thing with the microphones on if they can learn to manage their mind over time. So number one is the stimulus. Number two is the interpretation, the way that we process that thing. And that could be an argument with somebody. That could be an encounter. That could be, I just lost my job. Whatever it is, that thing that happens, right? Then the next thing is our reaction. Sorry, is our interpretation, which is meaning and significant. Next thing is our reaction. All right, so Melissa said this, and I think she meant that. And so now I'm a bit angry, and now I'm a bit defensive, and I think she's being a smart ass. And now I'm gonna make a decision. I'm going to do something. I'm going to take action, and I'm probably going to say some shit. And so now, because I've just gone, she was being no good, now I react, now I make a decision and I behave. Yes, I was, you know what I was going to say, but I didn't say it because we're on a podcast, right? You know exactly. But I didn't do that. And then I react poorly, and then I have a go at you, and now I have created a problem where there wasn't one because you didn't mean what I thought you meant anyway. And then, so number one is stimulus. Number two is how I interpret the stimulus. Number three is how I react. And then number four is the outcome, which is the situation better or worse now, or the same? Is my day better or worse now, or the same? Is this relationship better or worse? Is this moment in time, right? And so there's a lot of space between the thing that happens. In terms of time, there's not a lot of space, but in terms of our ability to regulate in the moment and be aware in the moment, there's a lot of space for us to be able to say, have enough awareness to go, hit the pause button. Okay, don't react, think. Be still, be calm. I know you're feeling fearful or anxious or grumpy or happy or whatever the feeling is. That's cool. Just hit the brakes. Hit the fucking brakes. Say nothing for a minute and think deeply about what you're going to do next. And be aware of the story that you're telling yourself. Was she really being a bitch? Was she really, or is it because I've got issues because of that thing that happened 57 times with those other people and now I'm hypersensitive, right? Or whatever. And maybe she is being no good or maybe she's not. But either way, it's like even when people criticize me overtly, which as you know is daily, that's okay. Even when someone criticizes me, that's the stimulus. And I go, well, the interpretation is he called me a fuckstick, so I don't really need to read between the lines. Then in that moment, then I get to choose to, without trying to sound like a dickhead, to take the high road, the narrow path, or just to launch into a back and forth with this person that probably is not having a good day, maybe legit hates my guts or not, who cares? But definitely what I don't need to do is open the door on an unhealthy interaction and dialogue with this person that is insulting me, right? And also wish them well on the way.
Yeah,
you know. And so this is one of the challenges of self-management, self-efficacy, self-awareness, you know, being in the moment, being able to self-regulate. And I think our ability to be self-aware and to be able to self-regulate in the messiness of life, the messiness of jobs, the messiness of business, the messiness of COVID and a myriad of relationships and rules and regulations and lockdown. And I'm with everybody. I don't love it. I sure don't love it. But I tell you what I don't do. I don't waste energy on it. It's not because I don't care. It's not because it doesn't impact me. It's not because I like it. It's because I can't control it. I can't change it. So what I can do, I go, what's the best use of my time? Is it going into the city with a placard? Nah. By the way, if people want to do that, sure. I'm not suggesting it. I'm not suggesting you do, you don't, right? Don't misinterpret what I'm saying. Like people are going to do what they're going to do.
Yep.
I'm not going in though, right? So I go, what's the best use of my time and energy? Well, I could be wrong, but I think the best use of my time and energy is managing myself, firstly, on a physical, mental, emotional, social, spiritual level so that I'm good, I'm healthy, I'm well, that I am managing me optimally so that I can be good for others, so that I can encourage and support others who are struggling because I think that's my purpose.
Yep.
Right? And so, you know, that ability to be able to self-manage and, you know, that's really important of the state that we call happiness. But let's go back to that for a moment.
Can I just quickly interrupt with one quick question? Because you mentioned that obviously there's that brief moment between when something happens and the way that you respond or how you choose to respond. And it is very brief. But do you feel that perhaps over time, the more practice you get, the more aware you are of that moment, the longer it kind of feels, or the more time you feel that you actually have in that moment?
If you do the work.
Yep.
If you have the mindset that I want to be more aware in the moment. Because some people have been, and I'm not trying to throw anyone under the bus and no one springs to mind, but some people have been responding negatively to the same stimuli for decades. And every time they see someone on telly, they fucking point their finger and scream and or fucking this or that. Or, and I understand it, but it doesn't serve us in a positive way, you know? And like I think, you know, when we think about this, you know, when I started working 126 years ago, you know, just after Jesus was born and the apostles. And all right, that was a fair while before that, granted. But so, you know, when I started working on the gym floor and I fucking had no idea, of course, I was 18 years old. I was fucking had pimples and four pubes and I was a fucking moron, right? But maybe six. And I remember having this moment that, or this awareness that, people are complicated.
Yeah.
And fuck, like I tell them, and I wasn't a genius, but probably a year in, so a year on the floor, writing programs, doing assessments, you know, understanding, you know, I started training pretty seriously at 14. So 5 years in, I had fundamental understanding of how to write a program, prescribing exercise, fundamental anatomy, physiology, biomechanics, nutrition, like not great, but for 19, pretty good. But I realized that everybody who came to the gym had one thing in common, and that was, yeah, they wanted to change their body, but they wanted to be whatever, leaner, lighter, lower blood pressure, sexier, faster, stronger, whatever their personal goal was. But really what they wanted was to be happy.
Mm.
Like nobody sets a goal with the underlying kind of thinking this will make me miserable.
Mm.
Or my goal is to be less happy. My goal is to be less content or more anxious. You know, so there's a story that we have about happiness, and that is when I have or earn or own or do or get or change X, then Y will be, and Y being happiness, then Y will be the outcome.
Mm.
And that's a really interesting construct to explore.
Yes.
In that, you know, like I've worked with many people who created amazing outcomes with their training, many. And while, of course, there's a level of satisfaction and joy and happiness in that, did that set them up for long-term joy and happiness? Yeah. No.
Yeah.
And did I know people who actually, as they got in better shape, there was actually an inverse correlation with happiness and joy? Some, yeah.
Yeah.
Because they went from being in okay shape to being in really good shape. And now they started to become paranoid about putting on a pound. Now they started to become really worried about what people would think of this or that. And now they started to, and this may or may not have been Craig Harper. And now they started to obsess about their body and their weight and their measurements, like their arms, for example, have to be more than 18 inches right now, sitting on 7.5. Ah, whatever. Not these days, but those days, right? I was exactly like that. I had a story of when I look like X, then I'm going to be happy. And then I looked like X and I wasn't.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I was trying to resolve an internal sickness, for want of a better, or internal lack or hole or gap or chasm, an emotional, psychological, spiritual hole with biceps and veins, because that's my story. My story was people will love me, like me, need me, want me, connect with me when I look a certain way. And that, of course, that is an understandable but flawed psychology,
yeah.
You know. And when you grow up and you're insecure and you're fat and, you know, you get whatever, a little bit of humiliation and all that, not that people around me were terrible, they weren't, but I was humiliated and embarrassed and didn't like how I looked. And so then the story naturally becomes, oh, well, if this, then that, you know. And it's funny how we find this is the individual kind of pursuit too, or not pursuit, but so much journey, I guess, where I've said before, I got to a point on my journey, my personal and professional journey, where when I was young, I owned 5 different businesses and they were all successful at that point in time and all in the black and lots of staff and, you know, making good dough and all of those things. And in the middle of all of that, not because of that, but just as well as all of that, I was not very happy.
Mm.
One didn't equal the other. And that was because I was so externally focused. And so, go.
Was that a realization that you, like the realization that it's more an inside out job, that it's more how you're feeling and what's going on in your head, as opposed to what goals you can achieve or what things you can tick off your list? Was that a realization that for you happened over time, or was there a moment in time that kind of led you to that?
Yeah, a moment in time. Oh, no, it was more a gradual realization and awakening because, you know, the thing also, let me define happiness for me.
Mm.
It was funny, just before, I don't know if I've ever done this in my life, I Googled like happiness, the definition, and it says the state of being happy. I'm like, well, fucking thanks for that, right? And the funny thing, like many things, right, you know, we're all talking, yeah, we're using the same word. We're using the same word, but clearly happiness for me or a place where I might find temporary happiness or joy or might be standing on a stage, but for someone else, that's where they find terror.
Yep.
So obviously where happiness lives in inverted commas or what it means or what it looks like or what the experience is for us, I think it's really different. And that's why finding our own path to that and our own version of that. So like, I think there's almost a scale and at one end of the scale, we would have at the far end of the scale, we would have say euphoria, like that over the top fucking jubilation. Like when you see someone who wins a gold medal at the Olympics or whatever, there's that euphoria. And then at the other end of the scale would be the deepest, darkest depression. So we'll call the euphoria a 10 and the deepest, darkest depression a 1.
Yeah.
I feel like for me, most of the time, like for me, it is an underlying, like it's not a front of mind, fucking hell, I'm happy. I'm in the moment. I'm just, wah. It's an underlying sense of calm and contentment and gratitude and purpose and fulfillment, you know, and that sounds cheesy, but that is true for me. Mm. And also, and I've said this a couple of times, I think what people want is not so much the state of that euphoric over the top jubilation happiness, although that's really fucking good when it's there. I've never met anyone that stays in that state all the time, ever. But when it's there, let's embrace the shit out of that, like motivation. When it's there, just fucking ride that bitch as far as you can, right? But for me, it is more about that space that's kind of 6, 7, 8 out of 10, where I'm calm. And it's the absence of anxiety for many people.
Yes.
It's the absence of that inner kind of chaos and discontent and fear and all of that stuff that just makes our experience crap, you know? And that, yes, that intersects with mental illness, but also the human experience for all of us is that we all go through periods where we're somewhere between, you know, euphoric and feeling like dog shit.
Mm.
And that could be all on the same day.
Exactly, in the same hour, yeah.
Well, and you also think about this, like, and I don't like to bang on, but I just like using this example because all of a sudden you go, oh, yeah. So most of you know about John that I've worked with for a long time, right, who had a car accident, terrible car accident, wasn't meant to live. His family were told he would probably almost certainly die, and then if he did live, he'd have very limited brain function, but he probably wasn't going to live and he'd be a quadriplegic and all these things. And it's been... Is it 4 years, Melissa? Nearly 4 years?
It will be in December, yep.
And it's been 4-ish years of fucking just grueling resilience and effort and pain and courage and work and falling down and getting up, literally falling down and getting up and metaphorically. And you know what? Like the times when he and the crab who once was dead and now is alive, aka Lazarus. Fucking hell, what a bunch of misfits I train with. God bless them. The bloke who died and the bloke who also was died and revived. But God bless them. I love them. And but to see the euphoria on John when he, for the first time with sticks, walked up the stairs of the gym, which is like 16 steps.
Mm.
To see that look, right, for him to do something, that joy, that happiness that he experienced and that I experienced, you could say to me, Harps, I'll give you $1 billion, and this is on my mum's life, I'll give you $1 billion. That's a terrible thing to say, Harps, not on my mum's life, But I'll give you $1 billion or John can walk. I'm not even there, there's no decision making for me.
Yeah, yeah.
I give a fuck about $1 billion.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, oh. So you go, well, now, but here's something else. Like, this is all about context. Well, when I get up and walk to get a cup of tea after this podcast, I don't go, fuck, look at me, I'm walking. How great is that? I can walk and I'm pain free and I don't need sticks.
Yes.
Well, why is it so different?
Yes.
How come if he could walk like I can, and he still can't, but if he could walk like I can, he would be in euphoria plus 10%.
Mm.
And you go, oh. So what creates euphoria? What creates happiness? Certainly, it's not the, like, if walking created euphoria, everyone would be in a constant state of euphoria.
Exactly.
You go, oh, well, where does that come from? Well, it comes from the story. The story is, look at me, I'm walking. This is fucking incredible. I am so grateful. This is unfucking believable. I was meant to die. I was meant to be a quadriplegic. I was meant to this, that, and I am walking, and best day ever,
mm.
right? That is a self-created reality.
Mm.
So when I'm going, oh, my fucking big toe hurts. What a shit of a day. My fucking big toe hurts. And then I'm going down the pity party rabbit hole. Not that I would do that, of course, right? Then I am literally creating a shit fest for myself.
Mm.
Now, the guy who can hardly walk but can walk with sticks and, you know, is going okay-ish these days, right? He's going brilliant compared to where he was.
Mm.
He's walking around in his body that barely works, and I'm walking around with my sore toe and I'm having a worse day than him.
Mm.
Not because of my toe and not because of what he can or can't do, but rather, once again, back to stimulus interpretation, reaction, outcome. The yeah. stimulus is, oh, I hurt my toe. The stimulus for him is, I walked up the stairs. My life is fucking amazing. I am so grateful. I'm so thankful. This is brilliant. And now, not only is that a head thing, this is now a physiological thing. Now he's everything. Now he's producing happy hormones. Now he's sympathetic, parasympathetic nervous system. All that beautiful shit that happens with joy. What created it? Not the stairs, not the event. What created it was his experience that he created around that thing. And this is where we come into, oh, come on, brothers and sisters. Oh, feel the unction of the Holy Spirit, personal sovereignty, ooh. Which is, what does that mean? Well, that means not just where people go, oh, you can't tell me what to do with my body, or but where we really start to manage, self-manage everything for us. Where I go, I can make myself happy or sad.
Mm.
I can heal myself. And yes, I'm not saying it's all up to me. Of course, there are resources and variables, right? But I can literally make myself happier or sadder, anxious or distressed, calm with my thoughts.
Mm.
Well, let's start to manage that. Let's start to be more aware of that. Like the week before, I was talking to 100 police officers or so. And right now, and we've seen on the news lately, there's lots of shit going on. And I said to them, like, what do you say? Like, they're in the middle of, you know, they don't make the rules. They're not creating the fucking laws.
Mm.
They're just going out there getting kicked and punched and spat on and abused and what they definitely don't need is some bloke to swan in and go, oh, you'll be right, right? They don't need someone to swan in with the inspiration and motivation. And so we spoke about that. We spoke about how do I manage me? Like, we're not pretending. You know, this is the ever-present reality of COVID too. We're not pretending that things are good. We know they're not good for many people. We know that it's not fun. We know that people are suffering, and a lot of people listening to this are suffering. And love and hugs to you, if that's you. Even if it's not you, fuck it. Here's a hug anyway, right? Fuck it. Hugs all round, irrespective of your emotional state. Fuck yeah, I love you anyway, right? no hooks, catches, agendas. You don't need to be having a bad day. I'm just going to love you, right? But when we go, all right, well, this is shit. This is not good. This wasn't what I wanted, planned, or predicted, but nonetheless, here I am. Now I can start to self-manage. Mm. Now I'm not giving my power away to COVID. Now I'm not giving my power away to the way that that woman looked at me in the office. Now I'm not giving my power away to that thing that happened 5 years ago with my dad, who told me I'm a fucking dickhead and I'm never going to amount to anything or what it is, or whatever it is. And also, you know, what's another really interesting thing is, and we'll start to wind up, and I haven't let you talk as usual. I apologize to you.
No, this is good. You're on roll. Keep going.
Like, there's a biological component to this too. And this is when we create happiness. Like, we literally change our own, like, when John's going, fuck, look at me, I'm walking up the stairs. Now his brain is producing serotonin and dopamine and endorphins and oxytocin and all of these things that light us up and give us that feeling of joy. What's giving him the feeling of joy and excitement and euphoria is his interpretation of what's happening. His interpretation, you know. Anyway, I feel like I said everything and nothing. Yes, you look like you've got a question.
I did want to ask you a question. It might be a little bit off track.
You in the second row, Melissa, is it? Yes, what's your question?
Yes, please, pick me. You were talking before about how you were kind of like giving it 1 to 10 or whatever, a scale of 1 to 10, and that often people might picture happiness as being that euphoric state of being at a 10, but for you, maybe somewhere between a 6 to an 8 regularly is more a state of contentment or what you might define as happiness. Do you think, I'm just interested to get your thoughts, do you think if you were to say somehow maintain a level of 10, that our threshold or our set points would actually adjust over time and that would no longer be your level of 10? Like, you would just get used to that level anyway, and you'd therefore be seeking a new, like a 12 would become your new 10.
I know what you're asking. And I believe, by the way, everything that I'm sharing today, folks, just my thoughts. So that's a great question. So there might be something that for you now, let's just say, I'm going to give a stupid example, right? But let's say you're a total foodie. And what gives you a 10 out of 10 is fucking Krispy Kreme, double glazed fucking chocolate donuts, right? When you have one of those bad boys, you're in heaven. You're like fucking everything, your taste buds, the pleasure center of your brain is on fire. You're fucking, don't come near me, I'm just in my moment, right? You're having a 10 out of 10, which I doubt would be the case, right? But let's just say, and then tomorrow you do it again and you have another 10. Then tomorrow, and then if you keep doing that thing that gave you a 10 over time, the chances are it's not going to give you a 10 anymore. In fact, it might turn into a 1 over time, right? So there's that thing, there's that, as we said, the stimulus, the experience, the look, the donut, the event, the whatever it is that creates that response. But what will create that level of response in you over time will probably change. The difference, the caveat or the asterisk to this would be when we open the spiritual door and now we get out of psychology into spirituality.
Yeah.
Now, spirituality is a different paradigm to the psychology of happiness, where, you know, spiritual principles talk about contentment and calm and joy and fulfillment not being dependent on any external thing, any donut, any look, any car, any income, any anything. And this is a conversation for another day, but I believe that is the ultimate, not in happiness, but in terms of optimal internal state. I think that the optimal internal state, and spirituality, by the way, doesn't necessarily mean anything to do with religion or even theological texts. It means kind of whatever it means to you. But I think the combination that creates an optimal internal state, again, just my opinion, just an ex-fat bloke in a fucking flannel shirt with outrageous hair, is that synergy of spirituality, psychology, and emotional management and exploration.
Ooh,
right?
Nice. Yeah.
So for me, and also we could chuck sociology in there, but that really just manifests in emotion and psychology, right? So let's just stay with spirituality, emotion, and psychology. See, when we bring in, but the problem with psychology is that we're kind of wired for I want more. It's a slippery slope of never endingness. Mm. I need this to be happy. Or now I need this plus one. Now I need this plus two. Now I need this plus three. Well, how long do we do that? What if we could find that internal space of joy and calm and equanimity, that being the calm in the chaos, without having to constantly escalate the stimulus?
Mm.
Without having to constantly do more, be more, change more, work harder, grind harder, hustle more. What if we could find a way to be content in the middle of something that is somewhat consistent?
Mm.
It's not always evolving, although life is always evolving and changing. But, you know, if what if I could, same job, same humans, same interaction of sorts, same income of sorts, same body, same kind of very similar kind of practical day-to-day operations. But what if in the middle of that, I could actually find a way to be happier and calmer and less of an overthinker and less anxious because I'm doing a deep inner work, because I'm focused internally. I'm not reliant on or dependent on some external reality to manifest for me to be happy.
Mm.
It's not I'll be happy when, it's I'll be happy.
Yeah.
I'll be happy. And, yeah, it's more to it than just it's like someone going, don't worry. Well, that's stupid fucking advice. It's not I need a strategy. I don't need a, you know, just some dumb sentence or some I don't need you to I don't need a platitude is the word I was scraping for. But if you want me not to worry, then teach me how not to worry. You know, mm-hmm. And I think happiness is, it's a science, and I think it's a personal journey, and I think it's something that that we're always going to be working on. But I know for me, what I have learned is that happiness for me comes in service of others.
Mm-hmm.
Happiness for me comes in consciously trying to live my values. And again, this is just my personal take.
Yeah.
Happiness for me, or joy, or that calmness comes in having an internal awareness more than an external focus. And that doesn't mean I don't like having 1,000 people show up at a gig or getting paid for a gig or whatever. It's not about, we're not, we don't need to live in a cave and eat lettuce, right? But it's just, it's that, I think it's just changing the seesaw that happens between external and internal.
Mm.
You
know,
that pendulum swing of where's my energy and focus and attention? And so often our energy and focus and attention is outward.
Yeah.
But where we live is inward. And we go, I feel like dog shit. Well, that's because you never manage, you never open that door. You never go deep, you know, and you never explore that. What am I scared of? Where does that come from? And all of these things are okay and not to be avoided. Like, why am I the way I am? Why do I feel the way I feel? Why do I respond like this? Where does this story come from? Why is this my value or not my value? Why am I defensive? Why do I live in an echo chamber? Why do I get angry at people so often? Why is everyone wrong and I'm always right? What's that about? Right? How come I'm right so much? Mm. Could there be some, you know, this is just self-awareness. And I mean, I love opening this door because on a level we're different because we all talk about different the way we interpret things. But on a level we're the same.
Yes.
Like, who doesn't want to be happy? Fuck, no one. Who doesn't want to be healthy? No one. Who doesn't want connection and love and stimulation and excitement and you know, everyone, or almost everyone, I guess. So I feel like that was a good chat.
Yeah, it was
not
fun.
Sure. All right, everyone, let me know what you thought. I hope you got well. If you want, just jump on Facey or Insta, and if you got something out of it, tell me what you got out of it. Either that or just go do something with it and be awesome. No pressure. Melissa, I hope you have a happy day.
Oh, thank you. You too. Oh, I hope tonight goes day. Well.
What?
I hope your happiness session tonight goes well.
Yeah, no, I'm done. I don't want to do it anymore.
Maybe we could just play this.
Sick of talking about happiness. Fucking hell. See you, everyone. Love you.